information is free.
The law?
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge,
we care.
Appear to border
it shows.
The law?
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
When the lights go on again, when the boys are home again, all over the world. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 243 from Media Monarchy, December 16th, 2011. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. This week, war is over, heads held high in paranoid anxiety, selling access, shower scenes, and a scandalous giveaway, takedown sprees and drone rustlers, nanotech, dollar scores, girl hunter, and so very much more, my friends. It's December 16th, 2011, episode 243 from MediaMonarchy.com.
Sloan, I've Gotta Know, from their latest album, The Double Cross, their 10th album from 2011, and this is episode 243 of Media Monarchy. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies, cover-ups, and so very much more. Media memes and murder and mayhem and all the other insane categories of news that we go over in this show, and we call it the Real News Remixed. Like I said, it's episode 243, and we are broadcasting live, as always, every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time at the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. And, of course, a huge thanks to the stations that carry, spread, simulcast, and otherwise spread the love about Media Monarchy, like ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, and all the others, KDXRadio.com. Our archives of all our episodes in audio form are on RadioForAll.net, but on Archive.org, high-quality, low-quality audio, the videos, everything. We always like to tip our hats to the community at TragedyAndHope.com and point you to all the sites, FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Tumblr, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, all with Media Monarchy, one word, as your keyword or username. Now, I'll mention to you right here and now at the top of the show. We're going to do something special. There's going to be a giveaway within this show. I don't exactly know at what point in the show it's going to come. I don't run that tight a ship. But stay tuned. People really win from listening to Media Monarchy. Like Don and Gwen in Colorado, good friends and supporters of Media Monarchy. Huge thanks to them. They hit the button, they donate to Media Monarchy, and your support helps keep Media Monarchy growing and going and moving and shaking and helping to build out all of this independent alternative media where, as long as the lights stay on and the satellites stay in the sky, we can share this information. We do the show live, and I come from a live radio background, and I think that's how I work best, that you know that at 10 a.m. it's you're on. So we always keep the breaking news open. And it's getting disgusting. Star witness describes Penn State shower scene. These are the updates as now Mike McQuarrie testified just recently today, again on this Friday, December 16th. We will have that and all the other Penn State scandal updates, and more importantly, how they relate to the interlocking families and the child kidnapping rings. GOP candidates enter final Iowa stretch after tense debate. Consumer prices stay flat in November. Russian customs seizes Iran-bound radioactive material. We'll file that under our drone coverage that will be coming. So we'll leave that page open to see what happens on this, again, Friday, December 16th, 2011, episode 243. It's MediaMonarchy.com. Let's roll. NewWorldNextWeek.com. Latest episode, 95. Drone detention, Canada, Kyoto, and teen toking. New World Next Week is the weekly video series between myself and James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. 15 minutes, YouTube format, three stories. Story one, drones assist in corralling North Dakota cattle rustlers. And the related stories, Iran captures CIA drone. Obama appeals to Iran to, could we have our drone back? But it continues as another spy craft crashes. Elsewhere around the world, story number two, Canada withdrawal from Kyoto Protocol. And story three, survey says teens smoking and drinking at historic lows, but marijuana use is high. Meanwhile, Dutch police complain it's their right to smoke cannabis while off duty. Those stories are covered on the latest episode, NewWorldNextWeek.com. And some of these things we will touch on as we cover everything within the Media Monarchy Kingdom, all the other sites that we run that cover all the other topics, food and cyber and holy. But I won't belabor that anymore, except to remind you also that Thursday nights, live with Corbett Report on his weekdaily show on the Republic Broadcasting Network. I've been joining James. Last night was the second one for a Food World Order segment discussing only food, health, environment issues covered on Food World Order. So I'm going to experiment with trying to make a video out of that and put it up on the YouTube channel, again, just as ways to try and put these things out in different formats that folks in different ways and spaces may find it interesting. So we'll quickly blast through all the other amazing alternative media from CorbettReport.com. Episode 212, Remembering May Brussel. I'm so glad he did this episode. Incensed by the lies told to the American public about the assassination of John F. Kennedy, May Brussel transformed from an ordinary Beverly Hills housewife to a voracious researcher and tenacious broadcaster. overcoming the incredulity of the public, the prejudices of her peers, and death threats from the establishment, May took to the Santa Cruz airwaves in 1971 to inform the public about the real powers behind the throne and didn't stop researching, writing, or broadcasting until her untimely death in 1988. Episode 212 shines a spotlight on the life and work of Mae Brussell, and that's M-A-E-B-R-U-S-S-E-L-L. And, of course, you can go to maebrussell.com, and all the other documentation and sources and links are all contained within. Some of the latest videos and interviews: Terror in the Caucasus and Engineering the Eurozone Collapse, an interview with William Ingdahl on Global Research TV, plus interviews with Clive Boddy, Bob Chapman, Tom Secker, Robert DeFord, Eric Schein, Michael Goodbaum, Paul Hellyer, all that and so very much more from CorbettReport.com. Now, our other good friend, Clyde Lewis, from right here in Portland, Oregon, he's also on the air weeknightly here in Portland, and we post up links to all his articles, all his episodes, and all his new videos as well, Ground Zero Behind the Scenes. So, the latest posting, Paranoid Anxiety and the Quantum Santa. You better watch out, the Quantum Santa, City from Heaven. If you see something, say nothing. And a quick take from Clyde, breaking down not only indefinite detentions, but manipulating the media, and Clyde asking the question, is it wrong to report bad news?
Welcome to 1984 Behind the Scenes. I'm Clyde Lewis. Oh, did I say 1984? I'm sorry. This is Ground Zero Behind the Scenes. Yes, today is a very, very interesting day because of all the reporting that I've been doing on all kinds of strange stories in the news. And I find it very interesting that all of these stories that I've been talking about have been avoided by the mainstream media. Isn't that a surprise? As a matter of fact, I'm beginning to wonder if I'm losing my mind. I'm beginning to wonder if I'm in 1984 because I can't seem to get any of these stories out of the mainstream. Last night I did a report about Kellogg, Brown, and Root going online with their camps, and there are a lot of people who say there are no camps, no FEMA camps, no places to put people and detain them, although the document that has been released says they're preparing for detainment of up to 200 to 3,000 people at any one of the five regions that are there in the United States. We'll talk more about that later, but in the meantime, I have something I want to show you. So after all the things I've been reporting, I've realized that you better watch out because Big Brother is actually monitoring and changing the news. I have an example of this, and that is this cover. This is Time Magazine's cover from December 5th. It's called Time, Why Anxiety is Good for You. I saw this cover at a Chinese restaurant. The guy there is obsessed with magazines doing about news. And so I decided to look through it, and as I read, I got angrier and angrier because it seemed to me that they were trying to cover up the fact that there was a lot of problem in the world. There's a lot of things going on that we need to be aware of and a lot of things that are happening. And I've been reporting them, and a lot of people are saying, there's nothing happening. You're overreacting. Well, with stuff like this, I can see why people think I'm overreacting, because this says that there's really nothing to worry about. Anxiety is great for you. It's like war is peace. Ignorance is strength. It's like that 1984 stuff. Well, I thought I was going crazy. I thought I was living in some stupid parallel of Orwellian disproportion or whatever. So I decided to go and look it up on Google. And when I did, I saw that this cover was there, and a lot of other people were angry, too. After doing much discovering and much studying, I found out that this is the cover that they ran everywhere else. It's a cover of a man in the revolution, and it's Revolution Redux. Months after ousting Mubarak, Egyptians are now rebelling against military rule. I saw this, but up here it says, relax, anxiety is good for you. So this is what the rest of the world got, and this is what we got. A nice little story about how we need to be okay with the anxiety, frustration, and all the other problems we're feeling now. And see, this is what bothers me, is they're putting a nice little coat, a nice little sugar coating on everything. That the idea here is if we sugarcoat things, people will realize that the war's not real, the detainment camps aren't real, all this stuff, Clyde, you talk about is not real. When you have the mainstream doing this to you, there's no way that you're going to be able to get the information out where people will say, oh yeah, I heard about this on Ground Zero, and this is what's really frustrating me. I did some more studying, and I found out that the biggest story that's been censored for the year 2011 is that soldiers who come back from the war are killing themselves, and more soldiers are killing themselves and more dying than they did in combat. I mean, it's just more fodder for what I have to say is, You know, is it wrong to deliver bad news? Is it wrong to keep the empire honest? Is it wrong to report that this war is ruining people? Is it wrong to report that these camps are not right, that this whole thing about passing Senate 1867, the Articles 1031 and 1032, the idea of detaining people, the idea of turning this place into a battlefield, is there something wrong with reporting this? Am I overreacting? I don't think I'm overreacting, and I think that more and more people need to realize that this stuff is real. What you're looking at there is the KBR report that I talked about last night, the Kellogg, Brown, and Root asking for contractors to move in and support their little FEMA camps. And right here you're seeing that they've divided the United States into five different sections. Each section has a camp, and each camp can hold anywhere between 300 and 2,000 people. Now tell me that this whole document is a fabrication when they issued it to a number of people, a number of contractors to get the ball rolling. And then, of course, last night Tracy Twyman was on the program, and she was telling us about the mass burials happening where ashes of 1,600 people were buried in an L.A. mass grave, and more military remains are sent to landfills in Virginia. And that's another thing that's really sad. You're hearing about these soldiers that are dying, but what do to them? We take their bodies and we throw them in landfills. Where's the story? This is all being reported on the internet. It's all being reported in the national news or the international news, but it's not happening here in the mainstream, and I believe that it needs to be talked about. The enemy of your government is questioned, and it seems to me that anyone who questions is told that they're overreacting or fear-mongering, and I'm tired of getting that label, and I want people to wake up and understand that it's not okay to be fearful. It's not okay to be unprepared. You need to be prepared, and you need to be strong, because this is what's happening. Things are changing.
Clyde Lewis of GroundZeroMedia.org. And again, I'm really glad he's been doing those behind-the-scenes videos, and it's been great to be able to play some of those bite-sized clips here within the show as we try and spread the word about all of each other's work and support each other. And I'd like to think that a lot of the things Clyde talked in there, I know I've explicitly covered on my websites, and hopefully those sites can be a source for other folks whose work I admire. That's all the alternative media this week to blast through as we continue with all the amazing coverage as the world keeps spinning faster and faster. We're continuing through all the coverage on MediaMonarchy.com, and war is over if you want it. Obama-sia says we leave Iraq with heads held high. Not counting those without heads.
The end of the U.S. military mission in Iraq, now coming together with the end of the NATO training mission as well. That has only just been announced officially by NATO. Now, the U.S. forces still in Iraq, we're looking at around 6,000 at the moment of speaking that are still in Iraq. They're pretty much literally lining up to leave the country now. Those that will remain will be protecting the U.S. embassy. We're looking at the biggest U.S. embassy in the world, around 16,000 staff members there. But what does remain in Iraq are the Iraqi security forces, largely trained by the United States. And this is one question that will come up during this meeting between the U.S. President and the Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki. That is whether the United States can provide more training for those Iraqi security forces. That is still a very big question, because how much protection might those American troops or American citizens get who would provide that training for Iraqi security forces? That is something that will definitely be discussed here today at the White House. We're looking at a new phase in the relationship between the United States and Iraq, and Nouri al-Maliki, the Iraqi Prime Minister, is key, of course, in that relationship. He will be the go-to person for the United States for the next 3 years to come.
Mission accomplished. Iraq is now safe for multinational corporations. President Obama marked the end of the United States' almost 9-year war in Iraq on Monday, saying in an appearance with Iraqi Prime Minister Maliki that the final U.S. troops leave Iraq this year with their heads held high. CBS News notes Mr. Obama's taking something of a victory lap this week for fulfilling his campaign promise to end the war, which will effectively end when the several thousand remaining troops exit the country by December 31st. U.S. slips out of Iraq, no victory declared, because there was never any goal from the outset. That's not what modern warfare is about. It's about playing both ends against the middle, and double agents, and triple crossings, and international families, and their enforcement arms, and resource wars, and that's what this is about. And Obama had no more to do with taking this victory lap ending this war than any of the previous puppets before or perhaps to come. Any more than them. As we say so many times here, they are the front men. And the real moves are made behind the scenes. Hopefully in the show we try and give you enough information to hopefully that you can kind of do, hopefully, something with it. I don't want to give you just a bunch of garbage that you go, what am I going to do about that? But I digress. Obama's speech at Fort Bragg marks end of Iraq War, and Christian Science Monitor notes, as Iraq War ends, strange hush descends on U.S. bases. Meanwhile, at antiwar.com, Iraqi Deputy Prime Minister says Maliki becoming a dictator. What would L. Paul Bremer say about that? And rounding out our related war horrors updates, two helicopters crashed during training at a Washington State Army base, killing four soldiers. Probe underway. That is from the Washington Post. Those things all posted together with Obama sighs as we leave Iraq with heads held high. I even had someone say, yes, did you hear that? Supposedly the Iraq war ended. It's all the rage. It's all in the news. And that's the thing. When they decide to announce something to us, whether that's writing Osama out of the script or formally announcing, you know, an act break, they telegraph that pretty ham-handedly to the masses. And it continues. Presidential selection update. Selling access staying the same. Finally, perhaps out of just lack of other content, our own Oregonian picked up the truncated version of the Associated Press bit on Ron Paul. In third White House bid, Paul's message the same. And it recounts a story about growing up and war bonds and having epiphanies and realizations about monetary policy. There have been other debates and there have been other polls, and as we noted, we're racing towards this Iowa caucus, but again, ultimately, this is some kind of emotional con game, as Daniel Abramson called it so many years ago now. So let's just grab one quick, not even exchange, but it'll be a two-part bit where Ron Paul goes after the supposed front runner and wrecker, Newt Gingrich.
Why do you think Speaker Gingrich is a hypocrite?
Well, he's been on different positions, you know, on so many issues, you know, single payer. He's taken some positions that are not conservative. He supported the TARP funds. And the other thing that really would annoy, should annoy a lot of people, he received a lot of money from Freddie Mac. Now, Freddie Mac is essentially a government organization. While he was earning a lot of money from Freddie Mac, I was fighting over a decade to try to explain to people where the housing bubble was coming from. So Freddie Mac gets bailed out by the taxpayer. So in a way, Newt, I think you probably got some of our taxpayers' money. They got taxed, they got money on, they're still getting bailed out. But you're a spokesman for them, and you receive money for them. So I think this is something that the people ought to know about. But there's been many positions, and you have admitted many of the positions where you have changed positions. But, you know, if you were looking for a consistent position, you know, I think there's be a little bit of trouble anybody competing with me on consistency over a long period of time.
That's Ron Paul, obviously, at a couple debates ago, I believe. And we have all our other related updates. And again, I'm not watching this with the greatest gaze. Ron Paul won't rule out third-party candidacy, and that would be a good note, I would think. But again, ultimately, that's where we're saying this is essentially a rigged game, so what's the Beastie Boys song we played earlier this year? Don't play no game that I can't win. We do link up a compilation clip of all of Ron Paul's responses at the recent Iowa debate. ABC won the ratings crown from that. And more from Time Magazine, Swampland GOP hopefuls hit the trail for critical campaign week. And here's a truthful note from the Columbia Broadcasting System where the Obama sigh says the GOP nominee doesn't matter. Truer words were never spoken from someone who would know. Now, the kerfuffle poofed up as Gingrich called Palestinians an invented people.
Well, I believe that the Jewish people have the right to have a state, and I believe that the commitments that were made at a time, remember, there was no Palestine as a state, as part of the Ottoman Empire. And I think that we've had an invented Palestinian people, who are in fact Arabs, and were historically part of the Arab community. And they had a chance to go many places. And for a variety of political reasons, we have sustained this war against Israel now since the 1940s. I think it's tragic.
I would say a great way to break that down would be to go check out a long documentary online. Sometimes it's called Empire of the City, and sometimes it's called Ring of Power. But I'll just throw that out for you. Before we shift to the second part of the two-part Ron Paul attack versus Newt Gingrich, the ad, selling access.
Newt Gingrich was a career politician selling access here in Washington, D.C.
The year that he ran for Congress in 1978, he made a grand total of $10,000. By the time he became the Speaker, he made $675,000. By the time he left Congress, he's brought his net worth up to about $7.5 million.
84 ethics complaints while he was Speaker, driven out of the speakership in disgrace.
Having to pay $300,000 for lying, for complete fraud.
And I have lots of things to do, maybe earn a little bit of money.
Newt Gingrich is also the latest example of how the corrupt revolving door drives Washington.
He made $100 million playing the revolving door game.
A big part of that is just lobbying money. Congress is really bought and sold. They're bought and sold legally.
If you've been Speaker of the House, you're always an insider.
Gingrich received up to $1.8 million from Freddie Mac just before it collapsed. His think tank's got $37 million from the healthcare industry.
Newt Gingrich renewed his support for an individual mandate, a key tenet of President Obama's healthcare law.
Newt Gingrich has been on both sides of a long list of issues.
He went the other way when he got paid to go the other way.
Do you think voters are going to warm up to you because you're boasting about getting $60,000 a speech?
I was charging $60,000 a speech. Normally celebrities leave and they gradually sell fewer speeches every year. We were selling more.
He is the absolute symbol of that corrupt system.
Newt Gingrich. This guy hasn't got skeletons in his closets. He's got a whole graveyard in there.
It's about serial hypocrisy.
Newt Gingrich selling access, that attack ad from Ron Paul. The second part of the updates, Ron Paul draws big crowds and many undecided voters in Iowa. And an interesting one from the Washington Post that asks the question, will the 2012 election be a contest of Whole Foods versus Cracker Barrel shoppers? I would love to take the time to get into this story and how it breaks down this, you know, class war, this engineered class war by the scientific dictatorship of the Whole Foods shoppers versus the Cracker Barrel shoppers. And you can see again, of course, it's the fake political paradigm. Left, right, Whole Foods, Cracker Barrel, liberal, conservative, fake. It's the dichotomy that props both sides up. And that's why we see anytime there is some sort of breakout, it has to be corralled and wrecked and misdirected. Another interesting one you should take the time to go through on dcbureau.org. Newt Gingrich, Marianne, and the Arms Dealer. A buried FBI investigation, as noted again, the graveyard in the closet. The last note posted here is, again, another positive note. Obama's popularity at an all-time low, and those, again, are all posted presidential selection updates, selling access, staying the same. But we do have one update that we just grabbed a few hours ago from Reuters. Ron Paul strongly defends anti-war policies. Last night, Thursday night, December 15th, staged a strong defense of his anti-war views in an outburst on foreign policy that might lose him support from fellow Republicans. It was an outburst. Let's move to our EconoCrash updates as the rug is being pulled out. They're pulling the copper wiring out. They're wiring the building to burn it down to collect the insurance. Controlled demolition of a fake economy. imagine our economy was, you know, filled with, you know, terrible asbestos, and there were many, many vacancies and lawsuits. White elephants. Census, collapse, Congress, and more. And we begin our Econo Crash updates again from the Columbia Broadcasting System by way of the AP. Half of U.S. poor or low income. Squeezed by rising living costs, a record number of Americans, nearly one in two, have fallen into poverty or are scraping by on earnings that classify them as low income. Latest census data depict a middle class that's shrinking as unemployment stays high and the government's safety net frays. Hammering it in again and again and again, these things have all been done by design. Industries destroyed on purpose, moved to third world countries that had been already softened up by the enforcement arms of the international families. Continuing our Econo Crash updates, the collapse, death, and end of the euro on the economiccollapseblog.com, and Zero Hedge asks the question, was the collapse of MF Global premeditated? A conspiracy theory thought experiment. Now, I love how big Zero Hedge is, again, in the wake of this engineered financial collapse that began in earnest for all the public to see as the beginning of the show. Again, as we say, it's sort of ham-fistedly shoved in your face with some bad, like, variety style headline. When the economy crash started in earnest, that we all knew about it. Sites like Zero Hedge were there, and they were there early, and they were there documenting what was going on. Not only for folks in the alternative media and the conspiracy world, but other folks in the mainline straight world who also looked around and said, hey, yeah, this is all screwy. Ex-Washington Mutual executive settle FDIC suit. Press release from MarketWatch. Three former executives of the failed bank Washington Mutual agreed to settle a civil lawsuit brought by the federal regulators, but the government received far less than it sought. The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, FDIC, said the settlement is worth $189 million, which is well below the $900 million the government sought in damages. The bank's estate would pay $125 million. The remaining $64 million would largely come from the bank's insurance. But the three executives would also pay a small amount and also forfeit claims for bonuses and other payments, according to FDIC officials. The former executives, Carrie Killinger, Stephen Rotella, and David Schneider, argued they could not be blamed for failing to predict the U.S. financial crisis that helped cause the bank's demise in 2008, a crisis regulators themselves did not anticipate. The collapse of Washington Mutual was the biggest bank failure ever in U.S. history. And it was my bank at the time, and we covered this story in some detail when that engineered controlled demolition went down. Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan, in collusions, Sheila Bair, FDIC, imploded WaMu. Forbes asks this question, is Netflix a takeover candidate as their stock has been up and down? And I start to wonder, is there kind of an alternative name to navigating Netflix that we could think of just in case that name becomes a complete either anachronism or just moot? Stew on that. Our last note of Econo Crash updates posted is Census, Collapse, Congress, and more. Congress blinks on shutdown. Temporary deal averts government shutdown. We've got stories from the New York Times as well from the Wall Street Journal. There has been quite the acceleration, you'll note, of sinister legislation racing through our critter Congress, as we just noted in the recent clip, that they're all bought and paid for, and it's essentially legal with quotes around it. The flurry of legislation, the SOPA bill, the National Defense Authorization Act, this spending bill, the payroll, all of these things And as we've noted time and time again, in so many ways, satire and comedy can kind of break it down and make you go like a child and go, that's it. Like Bill Hicks said, we could feed and clothe the world a million times over. And we could explore space, both inner and outer, together as one. But that's not in the agenda for the families. They print the money. They steal the resources. They give us the debt and the fake. And they hoard and hide and occult the knowledge and the resources for themselves. Our job is to inform ourselves to not fall into the trap that's being set on so many levels. As much as we have the ability to. We're authors of our own fate, not masters of it. And before I digress too much, we'll continue with MediaMonarchy.com coverage. Media memes, mega upload, Golden Globes, and Mythbusters. Pop stars' contract proves YouTube takedown was bogus. What's threat level talking about here? Mega upload bolstered its legal case against the recording industry for forcing YouTube to remove the company's all-star promotional video, arguing that a copyright takedown notice was bogus since it had secured the signature of Black Eyed Peas frontman will.i.am to appear in a video singing the file sharing service's praises. I use Mega Upload, and the song has been pushed down and it bounces back up, but it has quite the star-studded affair, pretty much from the hip-hop pop world. But if you've been doing any file sharing or downloading with quotes around it, you've probably used Mega Upload or MediaFire or FilesTube or any of those sites. But they don't have songs made about them with Kanye West.
Mega upload, load. M-E-G-A, upload to me today. Send me a file. Mega upload. Mega upload, load, load.
Cause when I gotta send files across the globe, I use Mega upload.
Mega upload.
Cause when I gotta send files across the globe, I use Mega Upload.
Mega Upload.
I use Mega Uploads, man.
I like to use Mega Upload.
Yeah, I like Mega Upload.
I like Mega Upload.
I love Mega Upload.
I love Mega Upload.
I love Mega Upload because it moves fast, just like I like it.
M-E-G-A, upload to me today. Send me a file. Mega Upload.
Mega.
Mega Upload.
M-E-G-A,
upload to me today.
Send me a file.
Mega upload.
Mega.
Load, load.
Mega.
Users 1 billion a day, 50 million. 4% of the internet. Get the Mega Manager. It's 10 times faster. Bit by bit, unlimited. It's a hit. It's a hit.
M-E-G-A, upload to me today. Send me a file. Mega upload. Upload to me today, send me a file. Mega upload.
Mega.
Mega upload.
Check it out. Check it out.
Mega upload.
For free.
Mega upload.
Check it out. Check it out.
Mega upload.
For free.
Mega upload. Cause it's fast.
Fast as hell.
Game.
Mega upload, cause it's fast.
Fast as hell.
Check it out. Check it out.
Amazing. M-E-G-A, upload to me today. Send me a file. Load. Mega upload.
Mega.
Mega upload.
Mega.
upload. Mega upload.
Hey, mega upload.
That bloated beast was obviously the Mega Upload song. I probably should have stopped that a couple minutes in. I apologize. But that's the disputed song because it got a takedown notice from the almighty RIAA. But whoops, actually the artist had signed on to do it. Now the funny thing is, it's only a hair's width away from that to this.
Right now, with all of the nation's myriad of problems this year, naturally Americans found solace in vapid entertainment. And the biggest entertainer this year was, of course, pop sensation Karanika. Let's take a look at Karanika on Today Now, earlier this year.
And if you thought things couldn't get more infantile and aesthetically insulting than Fergie, Kesha, or Katy Perry, then you obviously haven't met 22-year-old Karanika, the latest and most horrid talent-bereft pop monstrosity the music industry has ever sadistically forced down the American public's collective throat. She's here with us in the studio right now.
What?
Welcome, Karanika. God, you're just the worst.
Now tell us, Karanika, how did you first decide that you wanted to be the cipher through which the cynicism of a morally bankrupt industry is channeled?
Yo, I just do what I do. Know what I'm saying? It's like, people just love my ish.
Right. Now, your latest single, Booty Wave.
What?
I honestly can't believe I just had to say those two words. Is currently number one in the nation, despite the fact that Rolling Stone magazine called you, quote, definitive proof that mankind is inherently evil.
That's right. Y'all just got a booty and wave. Booty and wave. Booty and wave. Booty, booty, booty,
it's
booty, booty.
It's moments like this when the end
wave.
Of civilization seems
booty
most imminent.
Wave. Yeah.
Just to be clear, you've
check
made
my
more
latest track. I'm going to slam your D featuring Pitbull.
Now, Karanika, according
right,
to my notes here, you are in the middle of your sold out Damn Girl tour.
Damn Girl. That's right.
Which is a heinous slap in the face of the English language, and will also travel to 47
what?
Cities, sapping the intellects of every young person along the way.
I said, damn, girl! That's right!
There's no light in your eyes, Karanika.
I got nothing to say to the haters.
I hate you.
And right now, our avarice-soaked, unscrupulous corporate advertisers require that we play a little bit of the Booty Wave video.
Hell yeah! Watch me kick it for y'all!
Booty Wave, it's like a booty tsunami. Now get down on your knees and call me your mommy. Don't misbehave, cause I know you want me. Search up on this booty, keep tipping. You wanna try this, you can't deny this. Come get inside this.
Come on, come on.
You wanna ride this, you can't deny this. Come get inside this.
Pop star single Booty Wave, most likely civilization's downfall. That was, of course, The Onion. We're continuing our media meme updates with Mega Upload, Golden Globes, and Mythbusters, and it's Golden Globes time. Yes, another award show, another reason to pat yourself on the back. We do provide the list of all the nominees. And notably, Woody Allen got a Best Director nomination for Midnight in Paris, which was one of my favorite films of the last year. Regardless of what you think about Woody Allen, he's not in the film, and you should see it. It's beautiful and life-affirming art on the screen. On a completely different note, on the smaller screen, Say It Ain't So, Joe. Fear Factor makes a disgusting return to NBC. Joe Rogan, who does so many good things, also does so many questionable things. Stray Mythbusters Cannonball impales home. Louis C.K. makes a fortune with internet-only show. I believe he made $200,000+ doing a digital rights management DRM-free performance, cutting out Apple, cutting out the TV networks, and netting the profit for himself. And that's how it's going to roll. That connects to all the things that we talk about. Whether it's your art, or your clothes, or your food, or your entertainment, or study, any of those kind of things, it's going to be a one-to-one thing. But again, to make it worldwide, the satellites are going to have to stay in the sky. since we've plumbed the depths there with Booty Wave and the Mega Upload song, let's class it up, shall we? Every now and then at work, there's a little clock radio back in the receiving area that usually has classic rock and other junk on it. But every now and then I'll stop by and be like, wait, what? Paper conspiracy? What are they talking about? And they were talking about the Dreyfus Affair and censorship. On themedia.org, when early film legend made the Dreyfus Affair, it was banned. And it was 1899. On themedia.org, breaking down, to some degree, the Dreyfus Affair and censorship.
Today, repressive governments routinely censor films they think will incite violence or overly enlighten their citizens. Susan Deitch's new novel, Paper Conspiracies, is set in part during what may be the earliest example of a government censoring a movie. The government was France, and the movie Georges Méliès' 1899, The Dreyfus Affair. It was banned for 50 years and not seen again in France until 1974. The 13-minute silent film was the first docudrama reenacting the tribulations of Army Captain Alfred Dreyfus, falsely convicted of treason and railroaded by the military to protect the real culprit, Major Ferdinand Esterhazy. Ultimately, doctored and suppressed evidence, anti-Semitism and xenophobia landed Dreyfus in Devil's Island, where he spent years in solitary confinement under wretched conditions. In the waning years of 19th century France, where you stood on Alfred Dreyfus said everything about your view of the world. Méliès's film caused a riot. This was an era flooded with new media, photography, fast printing presses, movies, which were easy to manipulate. So, says Susan Deitch, people chose to believe whatever they liked.
There was also a tremendous generational jump in literacy, and it worked both to support the Dreyfus case and also to condemn him. Both sides used and altered the media.
The movie was produced in 1899 about historical events that had transpired between 1893 and 1899. Is that the first time that's happened?
Yes, the Dreyfus Affair was the first recreation based on photographs and illustrations in weekly newspapers in France at the time. It was an enormous departure for Georges Méliès, who had previously only made magical, fantastic films.
You wrote in your novel, Méliès was an adored man. He offered escape hatches, transformations, jokes. No one wants to see what they can see every day, he said. They want to see what they can't see. Then he began to think about filming what everybody looked at, but didn't see. And so, what was it that people didn't see about the Dreyfus Affair?
Dreyfus's innocence. During the second trial, which occurred in 1899, after Esterhazy, the actual spy, confessed, Dreyfus was convicted a second time. That was when Méliès made the film, and to show that Dreyfus was in fact innocent, that this was all a constructed case against him.
Now, we don't see in the film invented evidence. What we simply see is a man who is driven from pillar to post, from the penal colony back to trial, clapped in irons.
Dreyfus's brother, Matthew, published a letter in the press that Dreyfus had escaped from Devil's Island because he thought Dreyfus was being forgotten. And in fact, he didn't escape. As a result of that, he was put in irons. Both sides used and altered the media. They would publish constructed photographs where, for example, one of Dreyfus's lawyers and maybe the editor of a far-right press, you'd have a photograph of them meeting when in fact they had never met.
So the film was banned for 50 years.
It wasn't until 1974 when a film that was going to be on television wanted to include some of the footage from the Méliès film that President Giscard d'Estaing lifted the ban.
That was the end of the ban on making films about Dreyfus. Why did it take so long?
I think it shone a very uncomfortable light on an event that involved a lot of serious mistakes. It wasn't the only film about the Dreyfus trial to be banned in France. The Academy Award-winning 1938 film, The Life of Emile Zola, was also banned in France.
In the name of the people of France, Alfred Dreyfus, condemned to deportation for life.
court-martial also orders that prior to the sentence being carried out, that Captain Dreyfus shall be paraded before the garrison of Paris, there publicly degraded and dismissed from the service.
What was it about the case that split the country so sharply?
Dreyfus was a very potent symbol for opposing ideologies. He was partly also a symbol of what was called the syndicate, the Jewish syndicate that was behind everything that was wrong, the threat of the foreign.
It's interesting, this movie was banned in France. You can watch it today on YouTube.
Yes, anybody with a computer can watch it anywhere in the world, anytime.
And it's almost meaningless. Did the censors win?
No, I don't think so. You know, as long as we remember the story behind the film. And I think also it's important to think about what it meant for Méliès, that he was not just this magician, which was wonderful. His magical films are wonderful, but that he had this kind of moment of conscience.
The Dreyfus affair and censorship. Thank God that couldn't happen today. Continuing our media memes updates from IndieWire, transitioning quite nicely. The top 11 political movies of 2011. And we'll quickly run down the list, beginning with the Black Power mixtape, which is available for instant watch on Netflix, and we will tweet that out at Navigate Netflix. Better This World, a bracing look at government crackdowns on civil disobedience. The Ides of March, George Clooney's political potboiler that they've brought back into theaters. The Interrupters, Into the Abyss, that's Werner Herzog's. We have Putty Hill, Rampart, A Separation, Shame, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, which I believe is also in theaters right now, and Tuesday After Christmas. And again, some of those I went through are available for instant watch on Netflix. We reported live for you last week, December 9th, of a shooting spree in Hollywood, as we have been covering for quite some time on this site and show, this mass murder contagion. John Atterbury, record executive, dies after Hollywood street rampage at 40. A music executive died Monday after being shot last week by a rampaging gunman in the heart of Hollywood. John Atterbury, who had worked with the Spice Girls, Jessica Simpson, and others, died at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center shortly before 5 p.m. Monday, spokeswoman Simi Singer said. The 40-year-old executive was shot in the face and upper body as he drove his Mercedes-Benz during Friday's random attack. Atterbury was the only seriously injured victim of 26-year-old Tyler Brehm, B-R-E-H-M, who police say fired nearly 20 bullets in the air and at cars as he screamed that he wanted to die. He was killed by police minutes later. We'll glance back at the breaking news to see that nothing like that is going on as we speak. Nope, it's still all presidential selection news. But as we close out our media meme updates, we will finish with another obituary note for Billy Joe Spears, American country music singer known for her bluesy voice, died at the age of 74. Reached the top 10 five times between 1969 and 1977, and her biggest hit hit number one in 1975, and it's called Blanket on the Ground.
Come and look out through the window. That big old moon is shining down. Tell me now, don't it remind you of a blanket on the ground? Remember back when love first found us, we'd go slipping out of town, and we'd love beneath the moonlight on a blanket on the ground. I'll get the blanket.
Country politan sounds of Billie Joe Spears, her number one hit from 1975, Blanket on the Ground. And welcome back to our digital Blanket on the Ground. This is episode 243 of Media Monarchy, December 16th, 2011. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. That and so many other sites within the kingdom, and they're all linked up on the flagship main site. We're going to continue with our last post on Media Monarchy, and wouldn't you know it, it's the 12:15 news purge when the lights go on again. And we'll begin this news purge with coverage we have not hit for the last several weeks, perhaps having a bit of 9/11 plus 10 fatigue. New York One has put together a 9/11 year in review as New York City marked the 10th anniversary.
It was a project full of fits and starts, but in the end, with crews working nearly around the clock, families finally stepped foot onto the National September 11th Memorial Plaza to mark the 10th anniversary of the terrorist attacks. The memorial opens to the general public the following day, staggering crowds by using a timed reservation system. 7 million visitors are expected to visit the 9/11 memorial within its first year. Mayor Bloomberg says 2011 may be the last year names of the 2,753 World Trade Center victims are read on the anniversary.
We have a beautiful memorial. I think that's much more fitting than just having people read the names.
A funding disagreement between the Port Authority and the September 11th Memorial Foundation will delay the opening of the 9/11 Museum, originally slated to open on September 11, 2012. Some 9/11 families fight the plan to house victims' remains in a repository behind a wall at the museum, saying they were never notified of the plan. 9/11 health advocates start the year celebrating the passage of the $4.3 billion James Zadroga 9/11 Health and Compensation Act. Officials continue to push for a wireless broadband network, allowing first responders to share information. On 9/11, poor radio communications hampered rescue operations and led to massive loss of life. Osama bin Laden is killed by U.S. forces in Pakistan.
Justice has been done.
New Yorkers rejoice, and President Obama visits 9/11 families and the World Trade Center site. City officials trumpet Lower Manhattan's rebirth, reporting that the residential population has more than doubled in the last decade. Construction continues on the World Trade Center site. Larry Silverstein's 4 World Trade Center rises, and the Port Authority's 1 World Trade Center begins to dominate the skyline. The tower will be completed in 2013 and will welcome Condé Nast as its anchor tenant, occupying over 1 million square feet.
Continuing our 9/11 updates, proposed skyscrapers in North Korea stir up painful memories, and as copycateffect.com asks, what were they thinking? We provided the photo for you. These two twin towers are joined together by a hub and sort of hive-like middle. but it's obviously a recreation of the explosions on the Twin Towers. Now, of course, after the outcry, they've backed down, just like everyone backs down about everything if there's the whiff of controversy. Last 9/11 note from ContactMusic.com, Sandra Bullock used 9/11 memories for new drama, I guess, to build up those tears. Our BioWars EnviroHealth updates up next on this news purge. FEMA kicks off Resolve to Be Ready 2012 campaign because, as noted, the world is only getting crazier and FEMA will help you. Hydro fracking in New York may be derailed by water contamination in Wyoming. More on that from the New York Daily News. Congressman at an NRC hearing notes that Fukushima is the worst nuclear disaster in world history.
Chairman Jaska, do you see a philosophical difference between yourself and your fellow commissioners with respect to the mission of NRC and how to go about it?
Well, but we do have different approaches to what we believe is safe and how we define safety, and I think that's clear in the different votes that we cast and the positions that we take as commissioners.
Well, specifically hone in on Fukushima. You answered a question about Fukushima just a little while ago to one of my colleagues, and you confirmed that, in fact, there was an attempt by your four fellow commissioners to bury some of the findings of that study and or to aggressively look at lessons learned from the single worst nuclear disaster in world history.
We did have a disagreement.
You did?
On the release of...
You did? Is that what you said?
That's correct.
Okay, go ahead.
About the release of the report and whether or not it should be reviewed by the commission prior to ever being released publicly.
What was the nature of that dispute?
Well, it was simply that I believe the report, once it was completed, should be made publicly available, and so the public could see what the views of...
Your commissioners disagreed with that?
There were some who did disagree and wanted the report to be reviewed and perhaps acted on by the commission and changed before it was released publicly.
NRC hearing exposes disarray at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. More on this from the Washington Post and, of course, the indispensable ENENews.com. Arnie Duncan at Fairwinds.com, and that's Arnie Gunderson, rather, asks if Fukushima could have a China syndrome. And that story and that film and that meme resurfaced earlier this year with the nuclear nightmare. And there's about a 20-minute video on Fairwinds with Arnie Gunderson for you to check out. The other indispensable site, FukushimaUpdate.com, with another video that notes Fukushima safety level not safe. And we close out our BioWars EnviroHealth updates with a clip further exploring the story we covered in the second slot on the latest episode of NewWorldNextWeek.com, Canada leaves Kyoto Climate Protocol, draws critique.
Canada is leaving the Kyoto Climate Protocol, an international agreement that was designed to bind nations to lowering their emission of greenhouse gases. CTV gives us the story.
Canada, the country furthest from meeting its Kyoto targets, becomes the first to have signed on and then pull out. The Tories argue Kyoto does not include the world's two largest emitters, the U.S. and China, and therefore cannot work.
At a press conference, Environment Minister Peter Kent made the case for leaving Kyoto. Here's CBC News.
The Kyoto Protocol does not represent the path forward for Canada. The Durban platform is a way forward that builds on our work at Copenhagen and at Cancun. The Kyoto Protocol, as you know, originally covered countries generating less than 30% of global emissions. Now it covers less than 13%, and that number is only shrinking.
In a column titled Kyoto Withdrawal Shames Us All, Canada's Globe and Mail writer John Ibbotson laments the government's move. Canada would never meet its Kyoto Protocol commitments. It would never come close. Rather than be formally found to be non-compliant, Canada withdrew from the accord. Canada gave its word to the world. Canada broke its word. The final confession was as shameful as it was inevitable. No one should feel anything other than ashamed. The Canadian opt-out comes on the heels of a UN climate summit in Durban, South Africa, where the first steps toward a new international treaty to slow global warming were taken. The move has since drawn criticism from several countries, such as France, India, and China. Xinhua News quotes a Chinese foreign ministry spokesman who says, Canada's withdrawal occurred as important progress has been made on the protocol's second commitment period at the United Nations Climate Change Conference in Durban, which runs against the international efforts. Some observers point out that Canada's action reveals the weakness of international agreements, the lack of enforceable rules. Adam Vaughan, environment editor with Guardian, says it this way. Canada's withdrawal is also a timely reminder that there is no guarantee countries won't walk away from their commitments later down the line.
Durban poison indeed. Those are our BioWars EnviroHealth updates on this news purge. And now the drug war, as violence beats results. And results have quotes around it. Violence beats the results of Mexico's five-year drug war. Tens of thousands of dead, destroyed lives, destroyed communities, destroyed ways of lives. Mission accomplished. Meanwhile, back on this side of the North American border, rapidly erasing, fast and furious death, slain ATF agents, family speaks out. That's from the Los Angeles Times. But a good note from Medical News Today, FDA committee recommends approval of Adasuv for bipolar schizophrenia. That's Adasuve. Now, we'll start the counter for how long it'll be before we have to cover some story about that being pulled from the market and deceptive practices and lying from the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Go. Geopolitics. Iran demands U.S. apology for drone flight. Again, this is the cyber war kicking into high gear, and this can be virtual flag terrorism. We'll cover this again when we get to cyberspace war. Bye-bye, England. S&P plans closer Scandinavian ties after independence. Will Scotland say see ya to the euro and the EU, like so many others would like to do? Meanwhile, Israel steps up efforts to stop illegal immigration from Africa. And lastly, counterpunch.org, and it's an article from Nick Terse, author of The Complex, asking the question, did the Pentagon help strangle the Arab Spring? Perhaps putting the cart before the horse, wondering if military intelligence went in and screwed with the uprisings, not asking the question of, were they stirred up in the first place by intelligence agencies? One note of history mystery, Carlos the Jackal, convicted for 1980s French terrorist attacks. One bit from The Telegraph and one bit from Reuters. France hands Carlos the Jackal another life prison term. A French court sentenced flamboyant Marxist militant Carlos the Jackal to another life prison term on Thursday, December 15th, for bomb attacks that killed 11 people nearly three decades ago. And that sets the stage for our transition into Murder and Mayhem, where, again, CopycatEffect.com, Lauren Coleman, author of the book of the same name, asks if it's Virginia Tech's Garuda again. Fans of the esoteric and shows perhaps like Red Ice Radio and perhaps Ground Zero Media or Coast to Coast or any of the other sites and shows like that may be familiar with something called the Garuda, and it's basically a Birdman. The Garuda and the Birdman is the Virginia Tech mascot. That only brings up to mind for me another Birdman in the adjoining state, which would be my home state of West Virginia, and the Mothman and the anniversaries that we are mere days away from. Speculation on my part, but we just like to note the sinister forces. Woman dies in freak New York City elevator accident. More from the Associated Press. Prosecutor among three shot at Minnesota courthouse. Suspect evidently defiant in case. That's from TwinCities.com, and I think I actually mangled that headline, but it's still funny nonetheless. They really wrote this. Prosecutor among three shot at courthouse, suspect evidently defendant in case, not defiant. But he was both. Belgian gunman, long in trouble with the law, killed even before the rampage. And this is the Belgium attack again, as this mass murder contagion goes worldwide. It's only interesting to note the massive events that achieve massive fonts on news headlines and special graphics on the corporate-controlled media when it is a massive Virginia Tech event or a Norway shooter event. Or of those ilk. Meanwhile, again, thanks to copycateffect.com, there was an attack going on the same day as the Belgium attack in Florence, Italy, and it was by the author of a book called The Key of Chaos. Los Angeles cop who staged shooting may serve only a fraction of his sentence. That's from the Los Angeles Times. And our last murder and mayhem note, I put it here because it seems only so very appropriate to me, because as I make my way around the city and essentially walk or take the bus, I look around and wonder and am surprised that cars aren't crashing constantly, because you guys have no idea what you're doing out there and are paying very little attention. And quite frankly, you scare the hell out of me. NTSB recommends full ban on use of cell phones while driving.
A University of Utah stat that I saw here that using a cell phone while driving, whether it's handheld or hands-free, delays a driver's reaction as much as having a blood alcohol concentration of 0.08%. I mean, I think people, when they're using the phone or when they're texting, they don't think they are impaired.
Well, you're right, and I know how difficult this is, because I used to talk on my phone as well until I understood the dangers of it. And 2 years ago, we put a ban on all of our employees from talking or texting handheld or hands-free. And I'll tell you, when I hung up my phone and I stopped talking on the phone while I was driving, it was like becoming sober and seeing that everyone around you was drinking. You notice the people who are distracted. They're not keeping up with traffic. They're not maintaining their speed. They're driving erratically. They're not holding their lane position.
But what about fumbling with the radio? What about passing back a bottle to the kids? What about having someone else in the car? There are a lot of different distractions. And libertarian groups say it's Orwellian, that it goes too far, that there are other things that can be done than a ban on cell phone use.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. There are a lot of distractions. And frankly, distractions have been around as long as the Model T has been around. People are distracted. But this is a new type of distraction. And what we see is that people are bringing more and more electronic devices into the car. There's devices that are in the car as part of their infotainment, and they really are creating more distractions. We're seeing more people texting behind the wheel and people being distracted by the cognitive conversations that they're having with people, where it's taking their attention away from the driving task.
Has the research shown that talking to someone who's sitting next to you in the car is different than talking to someone on the phone who's not in the car?
It is. The person who's sitting next to you in the car, think of them as like a co-pilot. They know what is going on in the environment. They're aware of the traffic, aware of stops, aware of situations that might become complicated. And they don't always expect you to respond when you're dealing with a complicated right. merge situation. But the person on the other end of the phone, they aren't helping you, and they don't know that.
If you just need a moment to think about that. Way more people are going to die that way than are going to die by phony, trumped-up terror. But again, I'm also not the ban-everything kind of guy, so let's continue to move on down the 1215 News Purge when the lights go on again. We reach our Oregon oddities. Mysterious toolbox explosion kills Oregon man. This bizarre story, I think, is still being investigated. I don't think there are any leads. The question, was it an accident? Was it terrorism? Interestingly enough, this came right around the anniversary of the Woodburn bank bombing in Woodburn, Oregon, that, again, we covered for you on our Oregon Oddities. So we'll keep an eye on that, again, as there's no shortage of unexplained explosions and PDX booms. But we can do crazy and murder and mayhem and econo crash like no other city. Two Portland men sentenced to more than 20 years for sex abuse of a Medford teen, and they worked for a health provider company. Fred Thompson, Oregon State freshman, dead of apparent heart attack at the age of 19. Coquille woman confesses in a letter to snapping and beating her 86-year-old neighbor to death with a shovel. Crooked deputy permanently calls prison home after murdering pregnant woman. And Portland man sentenced to 6 years in prison for exposing himself again and again. More on those gruesome stories from the Oregonian and HollywoodMemoir.com and Courier Mail. We reach our police state updates as Time magazine calls the protester the person of the year. And there are different versions and different submissions for covers, and the photo I provide is not the actual cover. But I think that's also a good reminder of what Clyde talked about an hour ago in this show about what was on the international editions of Time magazine for Revolution, but the American edition said, stress is good for you. Here's a shiny picture. Occupy Portland shuts down two terminals. Occupy Portland protesters then locked out of a downtown building. Meanwhile, in Cali, from InsideBayArea.com, Occupy shut down costly for Oakland Port. And we return to our Congress critters as House Senate negotiators agree on defense bill. 40 members of Congress protest the indefinite detention bill, which I'm just sure the Obamasiah will veto. Pentagon spending bill includes sweeping detention measures. House passes defense bill on detainees, also including actions on Iran and Pakistan and more. From Reuters, The Globe and Mail, InfoWars, and CBS News. The last police state update we tie in, much too large an issue to get into, but AndrewGavinMarshall.com gets into the Council on Foreign Relations and the grand area of the American Empire. We'll close out the 12:15 news purge with the grand area of my home state, West Virginia. Worry. Lawmakers pass Marcellus Shale bill as West Virginia continues apace to destroy itself slowly and surely. Meanwhile, freshman Senator Joe Manchin gives coal as a gift to his fellow Senator Chuckie Schumer. More on that from WKYT. Woman accused of taking $1.2 million from a casino. And we close out the West Virginia Worry on this 12:15 news purge when the lights go on again as dozens of soldiers returned home to West Virginia yesterday, Thursday, December 15th. When the lights go on again, when the boys are home again. That's everything on MediaMonarchy.com. We are now going to shift to the coverage of all our sister sites in the Media Monarchy Kingdom, and that would be Food World Order, CyberspaceWar.com, and we will begin with our coverage from the newest site in the kingdom, HolyHexes.com. And I mentioned something at the top of the show, and let's do it. Well, let's set the table. We still got some time. We're going to begin our coverage on HolyHexes.com with something we have referenced and something we have only quickly moved over as this Penn State scandal broke. We, from the very beginning, were reminding people to not be surprised about the Penn State scandal and to learn about the Franklin scandal, a story of power brokers, child abuse, and betrayal. Author, expert, Nick Bryant, the author of The Franklin Scandal, comments on the Sandusky and Penn State case with Peter B. Collins.
Nick, I did a Google search just with the terms coach and sex abuse. 83 million responses. Jerry Sandusky leads, but third item down, San Jose coach arrested on sex abuse. Sexual abuse by coaches, violation of athletes' trust, that's from Kansas State. The Brooklyn Poly Prep story you just mentioned, Syracuse, Pittsburgh, the list goes on and on. And so I do think it's important to expose the predators and to bring them to justice, and likewise to expose those who covered up for them. And that is central to the Penn State story, because not only did Sandusky get caught in the shower years ago with a young boy, and continued to keep his job. And, you know, his boss slow walked it, and the university downplayed it. They fired the ethics woman who tried to do a decent job of investigating the issues and evaluating them. And so that is not an unusual pattern, as you discovered in the case of Lawrence King and this Nebraska scandal that even involved kids from Boys Town.
Yes, Lawrence E. King was a political big shot, and he was also a very evil man. And he was flying kids from coast to coast and pandering them to the rich and powerful. And he was plundering Boys Town. And he was a big personality, much like Jerry Sandusky. And allegations came to through social services that Lawrence E. King was running a nationwide pedophile network. And I document that in the Franklin scandal. And social services contacted both state and federal law enforcement, and both state and federal law enforcement basically ignored the allegations. And with Jerry Sandusky, you've got variations on a theme, because it's known that Penn State administration knew about Jerry Sandusky, people in law enforcement knew about Jerry Sandusky, and people in social services knew about Jerry Sandusky, if not in 98, certainly in 2002. And he continued his predatory ways. What's really, really troubling about the Jerry Sandusky scandal, as I see it, is Joe Paterno said that he didn't know about Jerry Sandusky in 1998, about the initial allegations in 1998, but yet Jerry Sandusky retired in 1999 at the peak of his career at 57 years old, and Penn State gave him $143,000 as a severance package, and then $58,000 a year. What's come out recently, and what I knew very early on, is that Penn State and a number of its affiliates, up until 2010, have continued to pump thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into Jerry Sandusky's organization. Now, Joe Paterno had a tremendous amount of power at Penn State. And if he really wanted to, okay, so let's say Joe Paterno realizes his defensive coordinator is a pedophile and he wants to save face. I mean, I'm not morally built this way, but I could see how someone would say to themselves, well, I don't want to taint my athletic program, so therefore I'm going to cover this up, and then it's good riddance, Jerry Sandusky. But that's not the case with Penn State. They continue to pump thousands of dollars into Second Mile Charity. And that is something that Joe Paterno could have stopped in a heartbeat. If he would have said, Second Mile doesn't get another penny, Second Mile wouldn't have gotten another penny. So this kind of leads to the question, did Penn State cover this up for Jerry Sandusky and continue to pump money into his foundation to save face? I mean, was this all done to save face? Or does Jerry Sandusky have some type of leverage on Penn State and perhaps Joe Paterno?
Nick Bryant, author and expert on child sex predators, talks about the Sandusky case at Penn State and the Nebraska child sex trafficking ring he exposes in his book, The Franklin Scandal, published by Oregon's own Trine Day Books. The Franklin Scandal by Nick Bryant can be yours. The first person to email mediamonarchy@gmail.com with Franklin Scandal in the subject, you will get a copy of the book. All thanks to our good friend Alan in Omaha, who has not only been tracking this case and other connected cases from the very beginning, but does so much great work for us on Holy Hexes and Cyberspace War. And again, a huge thanks to him for his help in the Media Monarchy Kingdom. So again, my friends, first person to email me, mediamonarchy@gmail.com, with Franklin Scandal in the subject heading, you will get a copy of the book, The Franklin Scandal, from Trine Day Books. As I said, we have been covering the Penn State and related scandals quite a lot on holyhexes.com, but the updates come fast and furious, so I will leave you the links to go through these stories and go through them chronologically as the anticipation built around this supposed hearing that was going to come up where there was no cameras and an appeal was denied and there was discussion of plea bargains. And then we also had questions about Mike McQuarrie. as his testimony approached. However, at a last-minute move, of course, watch for the sports references as this Jocko Rama scandal boils. Odd legal move by Jerry Sandusky.
What was expected to be a dramatic encounter between 10 alleged victims and the man they say sexually abused them. Jerry Sandusky. Instead, though, the former Penn State football coach called it off at the last second. Why? ABC's Jim Avila is back on this story for us tonight.
Jerry Sandusky headed towards court this morning with a secret, his trademark grin firmly in place, wife at his side, and another surprise up his lawyer's sleeve.
The move today was the first smart move I've seen from this attorney.
After weeks of promising a grueling public confrontation with all 10 of his accusers, the defense changed its mind, waiving the preliminary hearing and instead pleading not guilty and heading directly to trial.
We fully intend to put together the best possible defense that we can do. Stay the course to fight for four quarters.
This is a fight to the death. This is the fight of Jerry Sandusky's life.
The 205-year-old courthouse surrounded by media. The grand courtroom filled to capacity with 250 lottery-winning spectators, including Sandusky's wife Dottie, his children and supporters, all set for drama. But the alleged victims waiting in the wings to testify never got to say a word. Court adjourned 1 minute after the first gavel drop, leaving them hurt and angry.
I'm calling him a coward. You know, anybody that would abuse children like this is by definition a coward.
Prosecutors had prepared alleged victim number 4 to be the first up. He waited 45 minutes close by to take the stand, and when told to go home, wrote this note read by his attorney.
This is the most difficult time of my life. Nothing has changed. I still will stand my ground, testify, and speak the truth. And he's underlined the word truth.
Why the last-minute change? Some observers believe that Sandusky's attorney had hoped to intimidate the accusers by promising a vigorous cross-examination. But when that didn't happen and they all showed up, he chose prudence over bravado.
And now we jump to today, Friday, December 16th, 2011, as Mike McQuarrie, assistant coach, testified in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, against ex-athletic director Tim Curley and ex-vice president Gary Schultz, both charged with perjury and failure to report child abuse. Well, another update surrounding the story that Jonathan Elanoff at NewWorldOrderReport.com helped to break about Pat Sullivan and former sheriff and drugs for sex and more. More information coming out, and there is more from the DenverChannel.com and even a PDF for you. A fourth man accuses Bernie Fine of sexual abuse. More from Deadspin.com. As we noted 2 weeks ago on New World Next Week, as we covered the Penn State scandal, how so many other stories are now coming out, from Colorado to Syracuse to all of these other situations. And that interview with Nick Bryant, the author of The Franklin Scandal, talking to Peter B. Collins, who's, of course, of Boiling Frogs Post with Sibel Edmonds. That whole thing is about 20 minutes long, and it gets into more of these other cases that are starting to come out as more awareness of this starts to come out. As we've speculated on this show, it seems as though all of our trusted and beloved institutions are, again, being demolished in a controlled fashion. Continuing on HolyHexes.com, original offering found at a pyramid from the Associated Press. Archaeologists announced Tuesday that they dug to the very core of Mexico's tallest pyramid and found what may be the original ceremonial offering placed on the site of the Pyramid of the Sun before construction began. More from the National Institute of Anthropology and History. We ask another question, where is the Stone of Destiny? An article from Philip Coppens gets into this coronation stone, Jacob's Pillow, or Jacob's Pillar, and it connects all the way from the past to the present and Elizabeth II and so many more things. One story that did get a lot of attention in the past week, we grabbed it from CNN, Saudi woman beheaded for witchcraft and sorcery. Amnesty International called for a halt in executions there. Amina bint Abdel Halim Nassar executed Monday for having committed the practice of witchcraft and sorcery. She was investigated before her arrest and was convicted of what she was accused of based on the law. Mother Jones covering horror stories from Christian tough love teen homes. And we also have Wonderful Blood, Christian Cannibalism in the Middle Ages. An interesting piece from strangehistory.net covers a book called Wonderful Blood, Theology and Practice in Late Medieval Germany and Beyond by Carolyn Walker Benham. And it gets into the Eucharist and the body of Christ. This do you part as you eat it. $666,000 in federal research to determine prayer could not heal AIDS. From the Chicago Tribune, thanks to a $374,000 taxpayer-funded grant, we now know that inhaling lemon and lavender scents doesn't do a lot for our ability to heal a wound. And with $666,000 in federal research money, scientists examined whether distant prayer could heal AIDS. It could not. The National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine also helped pay scientists to study whether squirting brewed coffee into someone's intestines can help treat pancreatic cancer at $406,000, and whether massage makes people with advanced cancer feel better, $1.25 million. Coffee enemas, no. Massage, yes. The NCAM has also invested in studies of various forms of energy healing, including one based on the ideas of a self-described healer, clairvoyant, and medicine woman who says her children inspired her to learn to read auras. The cost for that was $104,000. A small, little-known branch of the National Institutes of Health, the National Center for Complementary and Alternative Medicine, was launched a dozen years ago to study alternative treatments used by the public but not accepted by mainstream medicine. Since its birth, the center has spent $1.4 billion, most of it on research. On a different note, from the Jewish Daily Forward, Rabbi destroys TVs in a religious ritual. But finally, on holyhexes.com, we reach the point, and they do intersect sometimes in the strange ways of what can be a holy hex and what can be water cooler conversation. And this name and this story and this meme started to bubble up, and I heard it from someone, and then I heard it from my neighbor, and then I heard it from someone else, and of course it's all exploded into what it is now. The piece from Patch asks, is Tim Tebow God's quarterback? And it gets into the Mile High Messiah. It reminds us of the second mile. Everybody seems to be looking for some kind of deep meaning in what he does. But it could only be Fox News asking the question, what if Tim Tebow was a Muslim?
Thank you, Steve. He's just 24 years old, but Broncos quarterback Tim Tebow is in the media's crosshairs. Why? Well, many are criticizing Tebow's public display of faith. He's a Christian. But our next guest says, if Tim Tebow were a Muslim, attacks on him would not be tolerated. Jennifer Floyd Engel is a columnist for FoxSports.com. Interesting analogy. How'd you come up with it?
Well, I just started to think about it, and it hit me that if Tim Tebow were doing things to honor his Muslim faith, and people started mocking him, which has happened in the media, and we've seen other athletes in the NFL do it, people would be up in arms, and somehow, because it's Tim Tebow and because he's a Christian, we think it's okay. And to me, I've heard people say, well, that's a disingenuous question. To me, it's a very important question. Why are we so willing to let people mock the Christian faith?
I know, and I want to get to what you think it is in just a moment, but first let's show some of those mock incidents. So when the Broncos took on the Lions players, Tulloch and Scheffler, did sort of a mocking. We're watching the video right now. When they did something great on the field, they went down on their knees and looked as if they were saying thanks to God. Unfortunately, they weren't, right?
No, they were mocking Tim Tebow for doing it, and afterwards the idea was, oh, we were just mocking him, we weren't mocking God. And to me, there's another question there. Why do we think it's okay to mock someone who has the good sense to say thank you to God? It's his religious beliefs, and he's very genuine in that. He's very sincere. He is a firm believer, and for some reason, that's made him open season.
But why do you think Why? Because you came up with a really interesting reason why. Why?
Because I think Tim Tebow makes a lot of us feel uncomfortable, because he actually proves that you can bring God into whatever area or arena of life you're in, and he does what the Bible asks of him and what he believes the Bible asks of him. And so I think if you're a person who doesn't follow that, he makes you uncomfortable. So what do? You make fun of him.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting too, Jennifer, because if you watch the way in which Tim Tebow reacts to those kind of mocking sessions, what does he do?
Oh, I'll tell you what, we all could learn a lesson from Tim Tebow. He you know, laughs it off. He is so convicted in what he believes, and he doesn't care what other people are saying about him. That doesn't matter to him. He's firm in his beliefs, and I think he stands by him. I think there's a lesson on how you handle criticism from
him.
No
doubt. Here was one of his quotes. He was probably just having fun and was excited he made a good play and had a sack, and good for him. Wow. I don't know if I could do that or not, but that's how he reacts.
Holy hexes, hallelujah, hail Mary, pass. That ends the Jockorama portion of this episode, and it also ends our holy hexes coverage. We now move quickly through cyberspacewar.com with two posts on the recent December 10th total eclipse of the moon. It was unfortunately much too foggy here for me to see it, even though the Pacific Northwest, as we reported for you last week, was going to be one of the better places to see it. However, again, my man Alan in Omaha, posting on cyberspacewar.com, provides some photos and some links, space.com, Universe Today, boston.com, MSNBC, for some amazingly beautiful photos of this last week's lunar eclipse. Now we get to the 1215 DEF CON, right at the top of Cyberspace War, God's Particles, Takedown Sprees, and More. And as we note so many times, it may be a different site discussing different topics in different arenas, but the overarching themes still penetrate and permeate. NDAA gives Pentagon a green light for cyber war. That would be the National Defense Authorization Act. Not only indefinite detentions, not only unstoppable wars around the world from Baby Bush to Obamasiah to whoever the next Newt World Order puppet may be, Congress authorizes Pentagon to wage internet war. That's from Threat Level. Meanwhile, Blueprint for a Secure Cyber Future, the Department of Homeland Stupidity releases Cyber Strategy Framework, and we provide the PDF for you. Meanwhile, California unveils Cyber Crime Unit. That's from the French agency Press. Florida arrests 48 in child computer sex crimes investigation. That's from winknews.com. And from The Register, and something CorbettReport.com has mentioned as well on climategate.tv, cops target climate skeptic bloggers in three countries. SOPA tweet triggers political explosion, delays the vote between King and Jackson, and it's a free-for-all and our Congress critters, and God help us all. Carrier IQ meets with the feds to educate them on their secret monitoring software. Talking to the FTC and the FCC, as we noted for you last week, Carrier IQ, another way that you're tracked and traced in everything that you do. Lockmart delivers GPS-3 Pathfinder satellite to Denver on schedule. More on that from SpaceDaily.com. Judge gives Universal Music 24 hours to explain their recent takedown spree. That's from Ars Technica. And Amazon's Big Brother patent knows where you'll go. That's from the Columbia Broadcasting System. And the Flash, Gordon supercomputer powers up in January. Again, from theregister.co.uk. Galileo in tune as first navigation signal transmitted to Earth. And the nearest supernova since 1986 blasts Boffin off his chair. August 24th of this year, there was a supernova, and it was a white dwarf star. Getting back to inner space, DNA hackers discussed on Computer World, synthetic biology, weaponized virus, zero-day exploit to infect your brain. But Higgs boson hunters may have the God particle in their sights. The Large Hadron Collider may have revealed the first hints of the Higgs boson. More from Wired Science and, again, The Register. But we'll close out from The New York Times and the YouTube obituary on Boris Chertok. Russian rocket engineer dies at 99.
The Russian space rocket designer Boris Chertok has died at the age of 99. For many years, Chertok played a key role in engineering Soviet-era space programs and was closely involved in preparing the first human flight to space by Yuri Gagarin in 1961.
Billionaire plans megaplane for space tourism. A strato launch plane could make space tourism affordable, but not for you, slave. Pacific Northwest's billionaire Microsoft co-founder Paul G. Allen has set foot down a path trailblazed generations ago by another eccentric business kingpin. He intends to build the biggest aircraft ever flown. However, unlike Howard Hughes' monster Spruce Goose 1940s flying boat, which is also here in the Pacific Northwest, Paul Allen's plans appear at least feasible, and he has some big names attached.
It'll be a few more years before astronauts fly again in American spacecraft, but when they do, the vehicles will be developed by private companies, not by NASA. John Blackstone reports we got our first look today at a new kind of ship that doesn't need a launch pad.
The wingspan of this plane is greater than the length of a football field. Now just think about that for a second.
Paul Allen, the billionaire co-founder of Microsoft, has a plan to build the world's biggest airplane and use it to launch rockets into Earth orbit. The twin fuselage craft will be powered by six Boeing 747 engines and have a wingspan of 385 feet, nearly double that of a 747. It will carry a rocket to 30,000 feet and then blast off, an easier way to get into space than climbing through the thick atmosphere close to the Earth's surface. It may sound fanciful, but Allen has the help of legendary aircraft designer Bert Rutan.
I would love to be able to be out there searching for other breakthroughs so that we can have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of people able to experience that view.
In 2004, Rutan and Allen together built Spaceship One, a similar but much smaller system that became the first privately funded spacecraft to fly outside the atmosphere twice in 2 weeks.
We have a long road to.
Allen won't say how much he intends to spend on strato launch, but says it eventually should make money launching private satellites and carrying payloads for NASA.
I'm very excited.
Allen won't say how long it will be until he'll be offering rides to humans, but says he won't be among the first to fly.
Personally, I think I'm going to wait for a large number of those flights to happen before I'll think about it.
He goes on to say he's kind of scared, but things are getting faster and stranger. UFO on trailer bed spotted in Kansas. Does that count as disclosure?
Sitting inside Lindley's appliance store, Cammie Root is used to seeing large machinery towed down US 77.
Yeah, it sure caught my attention.
But what she saw Monday afternoon is something she won't soon forget.
There was this funny sphere that went through on this big trailer, and my first thought was, that looks like a UFO.
A huge 32-foot craft of some sort, wrapped in tarp and as mysterious as the transport company who called Sheriff Don Reed for help.
They told us that it was an aircraft and that they had explored other ways of transporting it, but this was the best way for them to do it. And they asked us not to say a whole lot about it.
After all, the massive load's shape would certainly draw enough attention on its own.
People were calling in saying, oh, well, they think they found a flying saucer. It looks like a flying saucer to us, and we don't know for sure what it is.
For nearly an hour, officers helped maneuver the craft through Cowley County.
The biggest thing that they had to deal with was down at the roundabout. They had to remove a bunch of signs and markers because the load was so long it couldn't make the corner.
While onlookers struggled to wipe the shock from their faces and the questions from their minds.
What was that funny thing that was on that trailer that looked like, something from somewhere else?
Continuing quickly on cyberspacewar.com, Cassini images of five Saturn moons, more from the Daily Galaxy. Microsoft spins their Android malware into a Windows Phone giveaway. Never let a crisis go unexploited. Meanwhile, Senator Ron Wyden of Oregon wants answers from Homeland Stupidity over their recent domain name seizure spree. And a related update, and that comes from Threat Level, and there's more from PC World and Boing Boing. Hillary tells world leaders hands off the internet. Meanwhile, U.S. government prepares its own censorship regime. Again, from BoingBoing.net. Gizmodo, Gingrich, EMPs, and propaganda. Propaganda cuts both ways. Newt Gingrich is bizarrely terrified of a fake sci-fi weapon. Moon mining isn't the only thing election and adultery enthusiast Newt Gingrich is worried about. The GOP candidate has repeatedly, publicly, maniacally claimed that America is on the verge of being hit with an electromagnetic pulse attack. This is crazy. The New York Times reports Gingrich's record of EMP hysteria, stretching back through years of public speeches and written fretting. He's wrung his hands especially hard in the foreword to a recent sci-fi novel, which ought to be telling. Unfortunately for Newt, an EMP attack is more the stuff of sci-fi and command and conquer than pressing defense policy. But the related video update and an article from blacklistednews.com ask the question, is the U.S. prepared for an electromagnetic pulse attack?
It's a doomsday scenario right out of a sci-fi novel, a nuclear blast high above the U.S. that could instantly plunge parts of the country, wide swaths of it, in fact, into darkness. It's called an electromagnetic pulse attack. Republican presidential candidate Newt Gingrich believes if this happened, it could cause chaos and death from coast to coast. Peter Vincent Pry is president of the Impact America Group, served on the Congressional EMP Commission. Newt Gingrich has warned about this on the campaign trail, but he's not alone. Other folks from both parties have said this is a real possibility. How realistic is it, Peter?
Well, it's a very realistic threat. The Congressional EMP Commission concluded that this is probably the reason Iran is trying to develop nuclear weapons, because they have written about it, right, about attacking the United States with a nuclear EMP attack in their military writings, and we have seen them engaged in missile training that has all the signatures of preparing for an EMP attack, including launching missiles from a ship so that they could do a EMP attack from a ship using a short-range missile that would catch us by surprise. And this is not just the finding of Newt Gingrich, or the commission on which I serve, but two congressional commissions, the EMP Commission and the Strategic Posture Commission, both independently concluded that rogue states and terrorists could indeed execute this threat, as well as three other major U.S. government studies.
Well, let's tell people what's involved here. Go back to 1962, and this actually happened. Back then, the United States was testing nuclear weapons in the atmosphere. This was before there was a treaty to ban it, and all nuclear testing went underground. But we blew up a nuclear weapon high in the air over the Pacific, and all of a sudden, the lights went out in Hawaii, right?
That's right. That was during the 1962 Starfish Prime nuclear test. And it came as a surprise to the defense community and scientific community. Nobody knew what had caused that. And Dr. William Graham, who was the chairman of the Congressional EMP Commission on which I served, he was then a young defense scientist. And it was his first job to go and investigate this incident in Hawaii. And it turned out that this was an example, this was a case of an electromagnetic pulse attack.
We're showing a graphic on the screen now of lights going off all over the country, but when you think about it, the problem would be far worse than that. You're talking about hospitals that have no power, people on ventilators who are suddenly dying simply because there's no energy. So much of our infrastructure relies on computer controls. All of that would be out. I mean, Gingrich and others are talking about the possibility of tens of millions of deaths from a nuclear strike that doesn't even land, doesn't go off right above ground.
Oh, that's right. And he's correct in that. That's another finding from the EMP Commission. You know, we judged that given the nation's current state of unpreparedness to deal with an EMP, that within a year of an EMP attack, about two-thirds of the national population would probably die from starvation, disease, societal collapse. This nation can't survive. It can't survive as a modern civilization without electricity for a protracted period of time.
Wow.
And an EMP would basically destroy not just the electric power grid, but all of the critical infrastructures that sustain life.
Good God. Well, there's not much you can do after that, but let's finish up cyberspacewar.com with the two bits that we did cover on episode 95 of NewWorldNextWeek.com, and that is the Rubicon Crossing story. Drones assist in corralling North Dakota cattle rustlers. That's right. For the first time, drones have been publicly, admittedly used to arrest American citizens on American soil, and they did it with cattle rustling. The other story we discussed is Iran captures CIA drone. Oh, tell us about it, Barry.
With respect to the drone inside of Iran, I'm not going to comment on intelligence matters that are classified. As has already been indicated, we have asked for it back. We'll see how the Iranians respond.
We shall see. Let's now quickly, finally, in this episode 243, move to our coverage on Food World Order, which, again, we are doing a new weekly segment Thursday nights on Corbett Report Radio covering Food World Order issues. McDonald's delivery service drives growth in foreign markets. When Americans are too busy or lazy to cook, they often place an order with their favorite Chinese restaurant. So who do Chinese people call when they want food delivered? McDonald's and KFC. Delivery becoming an important part of the growth strategy at McDonald's Corp and Yum Brands Incorporated KFC chain in parts of the world where cities are too crowded and real estate costs too high to justify building drive-thrus. The related update from the Financial Times, if you can power through the paywall, Yum Brands plans to be the McDonald's of China. Continuing on Food World Order, dozens ill after attending events at the Duluth, Minnesota Ballroom, the Gray Salon Ballroom, but back here in Portland, Oregon, at the Crown Plaza Hotel, we had our own staff outbreak. And the other note, bootleg liquor kills 143 in eastern India. Back to the Pacific Northwest, Seattle School Board may ease ban on junk food. Seattle schools want back in the junk food dealing racket. Of course they do, because there's money to be made in destroying our kids. And a good note, back in Portland, Senator Ron Wyden pushes healthy food in schools, trying to, I believe, kind of change the standards to make it okay to maybe give some of those smaller pears from the local farmer to your school, even though they may not have met the original size requirements. Asheville, North Carolina, food trucks prepping at downtown parking lot, as we've noted for you here. Food cart explosion is well underway, and we've taught other cities how to do it. Ex-health inspectors nabbed on bribery charges in San Francisco. Two accused of bribery for selling food safety exams. And speaking of overpriced San Francisco restaurants, expect to pay more than ever at restaurants in 2012. Business Insider and QSR Web getting into the new report showing, duh, restaurant costs will continue to rise in 2012. Federal agents raid Mormon food storage facility, as was the plan all along in the so-called war on terror, officially now devolved into a war on American people. More on that story from Natural News. Dollar stores score customers with more food and better sights. That's right. Dollar stores are raking in the dough, rocketing up the corporate ladder, because more people are buying their food at the dollar store.
Yeah, but it's cheap.
Food prices likely to stay high. The corn effect, as the Associated Press calls it. Wall Street Journal, meanwhile, notes record output seen for grains. And our next to last post on the Food World Order rundown, rural farmers unite to feed Occupy protesters.
Before I was doing this, I had this job where I didn't make hardly any money. And I was so depressed. Now I don't actually have a place to live, but I have this work I do every single day. Now we are at the Liberty Bus Cafe in East New York. It's a soup kitchen. We get to use the space for afternoons after they serve their lunch meal. We come here to prepare dinner. Usually on a night, we'll make food for about 800 to 1,200 people. Today we have Voulet. He's a catering chef. He's like mostly unemployed and he only works bigger parties. He has experience cooking for like 15,000 people. So he's able to look at this stuff and be like, okay, this is what we need to do. Once we got this space, some farmers from Western Massachusetts were like, wanted to come down. So they contacted some people and they came down once. And at the same time, we got a shipment from Ithaca that was arranged. So it was these like groups of farmers in different regional areas that worked together and they brought stuff down and then they wanted to get more organized. The Occupied Kitchen sort of became a central place for these farmers to come together because they all had this related thing. They're small farmers, they're organic farmers, they're competing against like really big commercial and industrial farmers, and they have these issues. So they all like independently came to the Occupied Kitchen. It represented like a place to bring that to. We're actually constantly scrambling to make sure we cook all of the food. There's so much produce coming in, and we're trying to work with the farmers to switch to a system because we do have some budget money, so we can funnel that money, that donation money, through the farmers so the farmers get paid and we can cook it, because we want to support the work they're doing. It's sort of a mandate. You know, they want to support us, but the mandate is also to bring agricultural issues to the occupation movement. The New York Times poll was like 45% of Americans support the movement now, like 46 or something, which is pretty incredible. And I'm a part of that. Lots of people are a part of it, and I get to be a tiny part of it. And I'm doing so much work, and I can see the results of my work. Like, bringing all these people together, and it's nice. It's a whole lot better than bartending or being, like, I was bussing tables at the job. I was, like, cleaning stuff, and people would come with their kids, and they'd smash the rice into the cracks of the table. I'm like, man. I'm almost 32. Like, I don't know when it's going to change. I've been waiting and waiting and waiting, you know.
Finally, on this episode 243, as we blast through the rest of foodworldorder.com, we reach the 12-15 binge and purge nanotech girl hunter and more. Nanotechnology in food. In the absence of regulations, nonprofit releases new framework for companies to evaluate the safety of nanomaterials. Food contact nanomaterial regulations inadequate. We discussed this last night on the Food World Order segment of Corbett Report Radio. But continuing down the binge and purge, Kucinich says, protect our food supply from manufactured crises, as so many of these are. USDA conspires with biotech for complete dereg of GMO. That's from farmwars.info. Not for ag eyes only. Five lessons from the secret farm bill fight. That's from civileats.com. Huge food companies file antitrust complaint against huge egg companies. Kraft to axe 200 Cadbury jobs and invest £50 million. Hershey to acquire Canadian Brookside Foods. And a new machine prevents marshmallow shape loss. It's all going to be okay. Oregon's own Pacific Natural Foods nears zero waste to landfill goal, cutting waste by 48% with custom solutions. That's a press release on MarketWatch. Indiana sheriff rebuffs the FDA, protects farmers, and says, this is my jurisdiction. And that's the key. Making friends, not enemies. Daily Mail gets into a new book called Girl Hunter, revolutionizing the way we eat one hunt at a time, as a former investment banker from Manhattan becomes a chef, buys a gun, and learns to hunt her own food. Food shortages worry at Venezuelans. Dutch set to block ritual slaughter ban after Jewish-Muslim protest. We covered that recently, but I can't remember if it was on food or if it was on holy. British town grows all its own vegetables. Improved civic life and reduced crime result. Imagine that. And we close out the binge and purge. Oh, Krampus. Norway experiencing butter shortage.
Christmas might not be as sweet this year in one of the world's richest countries. A key ingredient to Christmas goodies is nearly impossible to find on the shelves in Norway, and it's in high demand. KABC gives us the scoop.
Norway is going through a butter shortage, and not only are butter supplies scarce, but the prices have also skyrocketed. Experts say a rainy summer reduced the quality of animal feed, decreasing milk production in the country by more than 5 million gallons. Stores have now started to ration how much butter they sell, and the Norwegian government has reduced tariffs on milk product imports in response to the crisis.
According to the BBC, butter sales rose 20% in October and 30% in November. Norwegian dairy cooperative Tine supplies the country with 90% of its butter, and Norway International Network reports the milky monopoly also contributed to the shortage. Tine waited much too long to address the looming butter shortage, probably because it's by its nature reluctant to open the borders to competition from foreign imports. In response to the butter blunder, the Norwegian government cut import tariffs by 80%, which should allow foreign suppliers to more easily ship butter to Norway. But believe it or not, a health trend also has butter slipping off the shelves. Toronto City TV says a low-carb diet fad is to blame. The soaring popularity of a fat, rich, fad diet has been blamed. Norwegians have eaten up the country's entire stockpile of butter, partly as the result of a low-carb diet, which emphasizes a higher intake of fat, sweeping the Nordic nation. That's what discovering an Atkins-style diet will do. Now, folks are taking the butter problem into their own hands. Literally, Norwegian newspaper Aftenposten ran an article with a recipe and instructions on how to make butter, and CNN reports one man took it to an extreme. Authorities detained a Russian citizen Monday who they said was trying to smuggle 90 kilograms, or 200 pounds, of butter from Germany into Norway. Food safety authorities then warned people not to buy butter from strangers. Butter stocks are expected to replenish by late January, but for this holiday season, many Norwegians will be left saying, I can't believe there's no butter.
And there you have it, my friends. A rather inauspicious ending to this episode 243. Good God, the world seems quite crazy, and we have to laugh to not cry. And I love taking a broad overview at all kinds of media, mainstream, independent, and otherwise, and putting it all together with the news and the current info and the media and the memes, and call it the Real News Remixed. And that's what I do. That's everything from all the sites. As we've been doing at the end of these episodes for the last while, is imploring you to come join us on twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. More real-time information, information that never makes its way to these episodes because there's already too much to go over anyway. But if you go to Twitter at MediaMonarchy, you'll see all the tweets, all the stories, all the posts, all the videos, all the podcasts from myself, from James Corbett, all the posts from allgov.com, notes about cult news networks, so many things on there. You'll also see, up at the top of that page, links to two other Twitter feeds that we run, and that would be Navigate Netflix, where if you check it out right now, you can see some of the things we've been previewing and screening at our own screening room at home. A documentary from this year called Miss Representation, examining how women are portrayed by mainstream media, and another one that is on Instant Watch, Real Engine, On the Trail of the Hollywood Indian, documentary by Not That Neil Diamond from 2009, getting into film's effect on North American Native people. You can also link over to Pump Up the Volume, where you can get Song of the Day podcasts, video tweets, photos of my turntable spinning, what I'm listening to at the time, and we've got songs up from David Lynch and the OCs and The Rapture, and so very much more, all linked up from twitter.com/MediaMonarchy. That's going to do it, my friends, as we tend to run over the time here a little bit recently, as I believe this is the fourth week in a row that the jock after us has not shown up. So if that continues apace, we may just stretch out and get a little comfortable and blow this baby out to a three-hour jamboree. This has been episode 243 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's December 16th, 2011, and we're going to go out with a song from, good God, is it from 1943? Should have brought up my notes. It was released in 1942. It peaked at number one in 1943, and it's by Vaughn Monroe and his orchestra, and it's all about the lights being out so that you couldn't target bombs. And as we see around the world, the mainstream media is telling us, war is over. If you want it. My name is James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, episode 243, December 16th, 2011. Ooh, I almost forgot. A tweet and a instant message reminded me. Sorry, this is kind of going off the rails here. I apologize. The book giveaway, The Franklin Scandal. I got two emails, both clocked in at the exact same minute. One nudged right before the other, so I'm going to call you both winners because you're both such big supporters of Media Monarchy, and that's Steve and Victoria. You will both get copies of Nick Bryant's The Franklin Scandal sent to you as a thanks from myself and Alan from the Media Monarchy Kingdom. I love you guys. I love sharing this information. That's why we do it, my friends. As always, don't hate the media. become the media. Take care.
MediaMonarchy.com is your source for alternative news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups. Featuring weekly radio shows on the Portland Radio Authority, PRAradio.org, the World Nexus video series with CorbettReport.com, plus special interview episodes, B-sides, mixtapes and so much more. Send news tips to MediaMonarchy@gmail.com. You can make a donation or mail media to the Monarchy at P.O. Box 12165, Portland, Oregon 97212. Thanks to all the internet and community radio stations who broadcast these shows, and most of all, thanks to you. Remember, don't hate the media, become the media.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.